Welcome to this week's Leader's Guide for the Spring Quarter of Life Groups. This resource is provided to help you prepare and effectively lead your group. For your convenience, you can also download a written version of the guide under Life Group Leader Tools at gatewaycrc.org/lifegroups. Remember to tune in each week and to look out for the weekly edition of Life Group Leaders Weekly. Let's join Adam Van Dopp now as he introduces this week's material.
Well, hey there, Life Group Leaders. This is your Leader's Guide for week number 8 of Life Groups here at Gateway Community Church of winter 2024 semester. And, you know, we are almost near the finish line. The finish line is so close in sight. Soon you will be able to say, at least regarding this particular season of Life Groups, that I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race and I have kept the faith. As Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 verse 7, as he sees his years of service coming to a near end. Well, here we are in week number 8, and we're going to reflect back for just a moment on week number 6, where we asked a question in the Getting to Know You section of the sermon guide. The question being, what has been the funniest or most enjoyable moment in your life group up until now? Now, I'm curious. I asked you back then if you could take note of some of those themes and some of those highlights. So now I'm just asking you again if you'd be willing to share some of those thoughts and insights with me, because we would love to hear them here at the staff level here at the church. And also, you'll see next week that we always encourage you as a group to consider planning a week number 10 event, where you gather with your group after the season to simply just enjoy each other's company, to reflect upon the journey as a group that you've had, and to continue to build upon the relationships that you've been investing in for the last 9 weeks. Plan a picnic as the weather improves, maybe a dinner out, a backyard fire, or even a hike, or even camping together for a weekend. And as you do so, be sure, of course, take pictures and send them in, because we always love seeing what you and your groups are up to. We talked about early on in the semester is a desire to grow our ministry. And to grow our ministry, we need more leaders. And this is where we have appealed to you as leaders to help out, to chip in, to help us find and identify those leaders who already are amongst us. So leaders, at this point in our final 2 weeks of our semester here, I ask you, are there leaders who are emerging and growing in these abilities that you see in your groups? What are their names? We want to know who they are. Could you share them with us? Contact myself or Pastor Justin, and we'd love to hear from you on that regard. Finally, feedback forms are coming out next week, so be watchful for that as we send that out to every one of our members. And we encourage you as leaders to help us in that regard, to encourage your members to fill those things out once they do come. Let's get into the material for this coming week as we start with the Getting to Know You questions. Two simple, low-risk questions that you know that are fun to explore as a group. And here they are. Number one is, what are 5 things that give you joy? Well, reflecting upon life is always a good habit, especially when it's purposefully putting together a list of things that you are grateful for, especially in those elements of joy. It can be easy to identify the thing that brings you the greatest joy. Perhaps it's your spouse or progress that you've made in your career, but there must be more. Is it children? Is it hobbies? Is it projects that you've seen into completion? And you know, sometimes life can get pretty hard and joy can seem at a distance. It can seem far away. And when we focus on all of the elements in life that bring us joy in a moment like this, we're slower to get down because of all the good that there is in life. Second question is a bit of a fun one. If you can go back 10,000 years ago and make a cave painting in order to confuse everyone in the future, what would you draw? Well, this is just a fun thing to consider and enjoy, thinking about how life has moved on so quickly in the last number of years and what life would have looked like before all of the advancements of modern technology. What would someone think long ago if they saw a picture of stick people all looking at these little bright rectangles in their hands? Or what might they think about a stick people blasting off into space in a rocket? They would have no clue what any of that meant, but they might have some crazy suspicions as to what it could be. Well, let's go into the quick review section where we look back at our notes from this week's teaching and ask ourselves if there's anything that particularly caught our attention or challenged or confused you. And then the second question that we have offered by Pastor Justin, who writes, this past weekend, Pastor Justin talked about several references from our text that find their fulfillment in Jesus. For instance, Absalom hanging from a tree, Absalom getting javelins thrust into his side, David ascending the Mount of Olives, David wishing to die in place of his son Absalom, and more. Which of these gospel-rich references was most compelling to you and why? Let's lead into the scripture review portion where we read the text of 2 Samuel 12 verses 10 through 14, 18 verse 5, 9 through 15, and 24 through 33. And we ask ourselves the question of what does these passages say about God? What do they say about fallen humanity? And where do these passages expose our sinful behaviors? Following into the digging deeper portion, the meat and potatoes of our discussion today, read question number one, read 2 Samuel 18 verse 5. Question asks, David encountered a lot of hardship in this scope of chapters. Here, David's heart appears to be now in the right place. What do you suppose was at the forefront of his mind as he gave this particular order? You see, David must have known all what was going on with his son Absalom, as it all happens within his own home, in his palace, and within his own kingdom. From Absalom's murder of David's other son Amnon to his attempts to take over the throne for himself. All of these actions were a direct offense to David, as they undermined his position as king and as father and tormented his own understanding of how God has called his people to live. As David's men are charging after Absalom, he knows that their intentions are to capture and to end his attempt of taking the throne by likely taking his life. And David commands the army to deal gently for my sake, the young man Absalom. And David's heart here for his son has broken, and he feels terrible that his son has made the choices that he has, and now he will suffer the consequences of his own actions, all because of David's own sins. It's said that the sins of the parents are unkept and uncared for are replicated in the sins of their children. And this very point pains David's heart, as he sees his own actions play out in the life of his son. You see, David has already lost two sons, and is now looks like he's about to lose a third. The first was the son born out of his sin with Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 12, then Amnon in 2 Samuel 13, after he raped his sister Tamar. As David was told by Nathan earlier that the child who is born of you shall die, 2 Samuel 12, it seems like Nathan was not just speaking about one son, but of three. When events happen in threes or phrases are repeated three times in scriptures, there's an emphasis upon completion. Hence, Absalom's death here could indicate the completion of God's judgment upon David in this particular moment. Read bullet point question number one here. Read 2 Samuel 12 verses 5 through 6. Compare David's response to Nathan in 2 Samuel 12 and his response here in chapter 18. What's the difference? What caused his change of heart? As David heard the story of the rich man taking the poor man's lamb, David overreacted as he demanded the death of the rich man, when God's word only called for the rich man to repay the poor man only four lambs in place of the one that he stole. You see, David here was carrying and hiding the guilt of his own actions and was defending himself. Now, as he worries about his own son, he sees the effects of his own actions carry out in the life of his own son. So there's a level of guilt here. But also he's worked through in his own heart his initial guilt with the Lord, as his own heart has now been evidenced that has been worked on by the Spirit. You see, his confession with Nathan has led him to a place of being more honest with himself. He's being more aware of what he's capable of, and he's now evaluating his actions before he lives them. As he's prayed for a clean heart, and as he's prayed for a renewed spirit in Psalm 51, the Lord has granted it. Question number two. Read 2 Samuel 14, 25 through 26, and chapter 15, 10 through 12. Absalom was attempting to overthrow David and his throne. What might have been his motivation? Why was his plan doomed from the start? Well, Absalom was a very well-respected prince in the land and had the admiration of the people, and it was going to his head. And as he saw his own father fall and be relatively silent in a few important matters, asking the question, where was David when Amnon raped Tamar? He felt himself that he could do better, and he felt compelled to start an uprising. Well, 2 Samuel 15 verse 4 records Absalom's heart and his desire, where he says, "Oh, that I were to be judge in this land, then every man with a dispute or cause might come to me, and I would give him justice." Well, in his voice there's an air of arrogance and pride, which shouldn't well sit well in our minds as we hear those words. And so I want to recall here just for a moment the words of Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, who told Moses, who was sitting alone as judge over all of Israel long, long ago in Exodus chapter 18, where Jethro says, "What you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone." You see, Jethro was pointing out to Moses that the work of judge was not to rest on one man. and Moses set up for himself teams of overseers to help lead the nation. We see in Absalom here an arrogant and self-righteous heart, and we hear the echo of Jethro saying to Absalom, "What you are doing is not good." And so the plan is doomed from the start in two different ways. First is that the theme of these books, of 1 and 2 Samuel, is that God humbles the proud and exalts the humble. Absalom is surely facing the moment of God humbling him in his pride. And secondly, God made a covenant with David that it is his throne that will be established forever, not Absalom's. Yes, Absalom is David's son, and so the throne would potentially still be in the family. But the takeover was outside of God's plan. It was Absalom's plan and not God's. And so God would then follow up this with raising up Solomon to sit on his father's throne. Bullet point question here. Read Proverbs 16 verse 5, James 4 verse 6, and 1 Peter 5 verse 6. Like Absalom, we don't always see eye to eye with authorities placed over us. How does this example of Absalom and these additional texts seek to direct our paths? So leaders here, just a moment here. This question can easily get political, and that is not the goal, that is not the desire here. We don't want to be evaluating our government or the authorities in church or those things like that. What we want to be doing is focusing on the state of our own hearts with mirrors on rather than binoculars as we face moments where we don't necessarily see eye to eye with people in authority over us. We can easily find that our patterns and our decisions mimic the arrogance and the self-righteous heart of Absalom as he thought that he could do it better. And so Solomon writes the proverb and likely has some family history in mind. James sees the heart of Christ who desires that people would retain and grow into a humble view of themselves. And Peter tells us that we're to make the decision ourselves to live under God's authority and not our own personal authority. And so ultimately here, Absalom thought that the kingship and leading the nation was all about himself and his own abilities. What David had learned and soon forgotten and quickly relearned was that leading the nation and being a person of influence was not about himself, but all about God. I want you to go back and look at Psalm 51 here, specifically at verse 13, where there's a tone switch. Up until then, David has been talking about his burdens and his request for forgiveness from the Lord. Then in verse 13, he says, "Then I will teach transgressors." He says that he desires this forgiveness so that he can make a better difference in this world, in his kingdom, in God's kingdom, for the Lord and for God, not for himself. It's an outward and missional focus rather than an inward and selfish posture. Read question number 3. Read 2 Samuel 18 verse 33. David is deeply moved and shaken at the news of his death of his son, a son who deeply betrayed him on more than one occasion. How could David respond the way he did? Now, earlier we talked about the change in David's posture towards bad news, specifically in how he commanded that Absalom be treated gently. There we saw that David's heart was in the right place as he saw his own guilt and the consequences of his actions and how they all affected the life now of this third son. Here we see the same thing. David's raw sadness and despair of the greatest of displays in what is said to be one of the most moving verses in the entire Bible. While we see the painful moment of the father who lost yet another child, we see something else that David does not, and that is the foreshadow of Christ's sacrifice. While David could not die in the place of his son to take on the consequences for Absalom, his cries point to Christ, who was and is the perfect and spotless Lamb, the only one who could die in Absalom's place, in David's place, in our place. And Jesus told us his plan himself, that the Son of Man, or of David, came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's Matthew 20. However, David didn't know that, and there's no way he could have known where all of this was going. But he honestly, in this moment, felt that he should take the place of his son, because he knew how and why his son ended up there, and that it was his actions that had led his whole family there. Well, let's take it home with this final question. Read 2 Samuel 18 verse 28 and 2 Peter 3 verse 9. Twice David's life was spared, and his kingship was protected in 2 Samuel 15 13 and 17 14 through 16, and now here again in chapter 18. God was keeping his covenant with David that he made in 2 Samuel 7 15 through 16. What do you understand to be the promises that God has made to you? Have you experienced God keeping his word? Now, through all these chapters that we've been exploring through these conversations on church on Sunday morning, and now through this short exploration, we've seen David's family not only be challenged, but also his kingship preserved. God kept his promises to David both in following consequences and the preservation of him. You see, God is a keeper of his word and will follow through with all that he says he will do. And I encourage you to take some time in your group to consider the promises that God has made to everyone in your group. And this perhaps might be a bit of a difficult exercise because we might not hear the Lord making covenants with us like he did with David and his family back in 2 Samuel 7. We might not hear the voice of God like Samuel did back in 1 Samuel 3. But what we do have is a number of things. We have his words to the Israelites in Isaiah 43 verse 10 and in Ezekiel 34 verse 30 to 31, which we can hear there his voice, God's voice to us as well. We also have the entirety of the New Testament where we hear of the love of the Lord and what the Lord has done for us and the sacrifice that he's made. We also have the story of our covenantal baptisms here at Gateway Community Church, where we see and hear from God who says, I will be your God. I will guide you and I will lead you. And secondly, we hear that he says, you will be my children. I will protect you and I will sustain you. We'll talk amongst your group and of course, all wrapped in praise of God and how he's led all of these promises in our lives. Well, leaders, be sure to close up your meeting this time frame in a word of prayer, holding up the needs of each other, both in the joys and sorrows, but leaning on together the promises of God that he will be our God and that we will be his children. Leaders, thank you for your service. Thank you for your time and thank you for your commitments. We'll follow up again soon. Hope you all have an amazing week and have great times of discussion and prayer together. Blessings to you all as you serve. See you.